to have Tony Rocco here. And I first found out about Tony Rocco because of the fact that they did a nice little piece in the Detroit Free Press on Tony when he was working at the auto show. So he was kind of the artist in residence doing live painting at the auto show. And I'll let him talk about that at any point today if you want to. I was intrigued by Tony's background and as a shop floor worker within the auto industry. He was identified as someone who did very, very good drawings. He ended up as a painter for the company and went around the United States painting in various auto factories. And I'm going to show a quick video clip that they did on Tony in Detroit to show some of those industrial pieces that he did in the factory, because I think that that's a good kind of background. Tony has been exhibiting now as a working artist, a professional artist. He brought a number of his pieces today, and he is about to be in part of a large group show in Colorado. He's done a gallery work in Detroit and elsewhere, and he can talk about all that. But he asked me to kind of kick off with this on the effects of art in the workplace, and he can tell you more about grabbing this specific quote. According to a national survey of over 800 people working for 32 different companies, art in the workplace helps businesses address several key challenges, such as reducing stress, increasing creativity and productivity, enhancing morale, broadening employee appreciation and diversity, as well as encouraging discussions and expression of opinions. The survey also indicated that art in the workplace enhances the work environment, evidences the company's interest in improving the quality of life and out of the workplace, helps to build customer and community relations, and leads to networking opportunities. So, fascinating thing. Now, let me do what I should have done already. And let me now start this video. But Tony, why don't you come up right now, and let me just introduce Tony, then I'm going to roll the video, that way you can start. So please, everyone, help me welcome Tony. And after this slight video clip, Tony's going to pick up and talk about one auto worker, painter's art from the factory floor to the gallery. So let's look at this clip first. And then, Tony, you can come over and put this mic on if you would afterward, okay?
The Wayne Assembly Plant is a dark shell of what it used to be. And walking through here, I feel an odd mix of emptiness and strength.
Images speak to us in a way that words can never convey.
It was a stroke of luck that transformed UAW worker Tony Rocco from installing door panels to safety painter and resident artist.
I refer to it as a Cinderella story. I mean, it was huge for me. It's just that I wanted to be able to
do a good job.
Yeah, to do a good job and sort of like meet their expectations. So there was definitely some fear as well.
There's no fear in these eyes. Rocco's work is colorful and full of emotion. Since his first murals of Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali almost 20 years ago, Tony Rocco has painted almost 50 different murals at Ford plants throughout their system. But his new painting, Lily, set to be moved across the street to the new Michigan Assembly Plant, is a labor of love.
In the piece we're going to see, we're using the repurposed materials of the former Michigan truck plant. You know, it was one of the most successful facilities in Ford history. You know, we kicked out the F-150 and the Expedition there for years, and sadly that plant closed. But it's just been a really good feeling to give these materials that survived the demolition a new purpose, sort of like crossing over into the new facility, and a meaningful purpose.
This work is meant to inspire. The repurposed material is a sign of change. In the painting, Lily plants the seeds of a new beginning for the industry, the worker, and for a safety painter named Tony.
I got back to painting for myself, and it seemed that immediately, you know, galleries began to take interest, and before I knew it, you know, I mean, I'm 2 years into the personal career, if you will, mm-hmm. and, you know, I have a solo exhibition coming up at 323 Gallery in Royal Oak, and it's just really taken off.
Marvin Gaye and Michael Jackson were commissioned for an exhibit in Hitsville. Plus, he will do a live painting at the auto show. Tony also has a show this weekend at an art gallery in Royal Oak.
If I can inspire somebody to kind of have that shift in thinking and sort of look at traditional materials differently and what some of the options could be for them.
He's a 40-year-old husband and father of two, and a UAW man who knows that the emptiness of hard times can be an opportunity for colorful change, even if it happens one brush stroke at a time. From Wayne, Lee Thomas, Fox 2 News.
So I want to thank everybody for having me. Thanks to John. And this great, you know, facility that's quite inspirational, I might have to add. When John first asked me to come out, I actually believe that I, you know, declined once or twice because I really didn't understand the relevance. And after going back and reading the description and the mission statement of our daily work, our daily lives, it made so much sense, and it's actually, I remember realizing how odd it was, because I kind of thought this was a fluke, you know, sort of this Cinderella story, but how common, you know, this sort of scenario is, and obviously it is because you guys are studying this sort of thing, and you have been doing this for 16 years or so, so. Anyways, I want to start by asking, since we live in the Motor City or in the Motor City, I'm assuming that a lot of you have affiliations with auto workers and UAW and that sort of thing, so this isn't going to be totally foreign to anybody, I'm guessing, but I wanted to discuss my personal experiences of working within Ford Motor Company and the UAW. And what a fine line that's been, you know, being an artist in resident for the two sides, if you will, and how that's shaped my personal life and also my life as an artist. It's just woven in like everything that I do, it seems. So I want to talk a bit about that. And, you know, the observations I've made, you know, about the culture, because it is a animal or a sort of its own beast, you know, the automotive culture, and just, you know, how important it is in understanding cultures and how to function within those cultures. I myself, just to give you a background, I myself was the first natural American citizen of my family who was from Montenegro. We're Albanians, and we're from Montenegro, so due to, like, religious persecution, things like that, my parents fled to a refugee camp in Italy, where they lived for 2 years, and then migrated to Detroit, so in 1968. So it was a time of riots, Woodstock, that sort of thing, and my parents came from this little subculture in the hills, in the mountains of Yugoslavia, where they were away from Yugoslavian people and they were away from the city. And so they didn't really evolve. That's why I call it a subculture, because they didn't really evolve and develop even to the extent that the was. I mean, I think even in Europe, they were quite a ways behind us, but in this particular subculture, I mean, it must have been like 100 years behind. You know, there was when I went to visit recently, there's like no running water still. Some family members have like no running water and outhouses and that sort of thing. I said that to say I myself came from a really sheltered and insulated upbringing. You know, my parents, like they said, they came. It was, you know, craziness, mayhem in Detroit. And they really just kept us close-knit. When I went to kindergarten, although I had been born here, I didn't speak any English. So if that's any insight as to how isolated they kept us. So I want to move forward to, you know, like, so as a result, and I'm not making any excuses, but school really wasn't encouraged. It was more about labor, and it was more about, you know, you go in there and you work hard and you make your money. And, you know, I remember hearing conversations like growing up, like, you know, passing by a group of adults that would, you know, say stuff like, you know, Tony, he's not for school, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, there wasn't a lot of, I mean, I've seen other families, and you know, they're talking to these kids since they're knee high about, you know, you're going to go to college, and what are you going to be? And those conversations didn't take place a lot in my family. So I hired into Ford when I was 18, much like, you know, a lot of people in the Motor City, and I hired in on the assembly line. And I want to talk a little bit about what that was like for me, because I had very little exposure even at that time to like diversity, you know, African Americans and just different socioeconomic classes, so to speak. So, and how different the culture at Ford was at that time and how different it is today, you know, because we've evolved a lot within Ford Motor Company and the UAW. I know that when I first hired in, and it's different today, management, you could visibly tell who was management and who was UAW. You know, the management would have their tie on, and they would have their white shirt and their slacks and their tassels on their shoes, and then the UAW guys would be in jeans, and you know, it was very clear who was production, who was hourly, and who was salary. So it was quite segregated as well. Lunchrooms, you know, different sides of the lunchroom, different lines to get your lunch in the cafeteria, different restrooms. Different, like, there's a, we call it Mahogany Row, or we used to call it Mahogany Row, but it's irrelevant now because everybody's allowed in that way. But there was a time when hourly personnel were not allowed down Mahogany Row where the plant manager's office was, and so on and so forth. And management wouldn't come into the U.S. without an invitation, if you will, or without, you know, business. So everything was really segregated. I also remember it was 1990 when I hired in. So it was interesting to me because the majority of the people that were at Ford Motor Company, you know, Ford Motor Company hadn't done much hiring since the 70s. And it was really relevant, I mean, it was really evident, I should say, in because I often refer to the culture as like they were frozen in time. You know, the white people looked like they were straight out of Woodstock with their feathered hairdos. And it was like 1990, you know, grunge and Pearl Jam was in, and things have changed. But, you know, these people were really frozen in time. I remember specifically seeing, like, African Americans with afros and picks in their hair and combs in the back pocket. And I'm thinking, what did I just walk into this, like, time warp? You know what I mean? And so I really didn't feel that I would identify with anybody. As a matter of fact, I own that. Oh my God, I'm never going to relate to these people. Let me just do my job and go home. And so on my breaks, I would just sketch, you know, and I was so miserable, you know, being an artist and working on the assembly line. I was so miserable where it had left me, you know, because I was working across from a guy that, like myself today, had gray hair and he'd been on the same job for 25 years, and there wasn't a lot of promise with growth. It wasn't like, yeah, if you do this for 5 years, we can, you know. And so I began, like, really contemplating, like, you know, is this it for me? You know, what am I going to do in the future? You know, I would come home every day and be sore and just was thinking of a way out, you know, constantly. When about, let me just make sure I'm online. So about a year into it, and again, I didn't make many friends. You know, I would just brown bag, no pun intended, my lunch, and, you know, didn't really communicate with a lot of people, would sketch on my breaks. And one day, I'm sketching along, and, you know, again, you can really determine who's important and who's not, so to speak, in there. And so these higher ups are like coming closer and closer, and I see a tie, and I already know that this is like one of the top union officials who doesn't even make it out to the shop floor a lot, you know. And, you know, they're coming closer and closer and closer until like they're right up on me. And then they, you know, and again, I'm 18 years old. And so they say to me, you know, are you the quote unquote, are you the kid doing all the drawings? And I remember thinking, you know, I was so narrow-minded or just so had such little experience that I remember thinking that they were going to tell me that I couldn't draw, you know, on my breaks. And I thought, you know, immediately, like, you know, do I just put this stuff away and like... So they said, you know, are you the kid doing all the drawings? I said, yeah. They said, well, we're heading up a plant beautification program in order to boost company morale. And I'm thinking, you know, how does this, you know, so you want me to leave still, or what do you want me to do, you know? And they said, we'd like you to come on and paint murals for Ford Motor Company to boost company morale amongst the hourly workers. Again, 18 years old, this is Greek. I'm like, you want me to paint? Why? To make people happy? Are you kidding me? You know, like, how is this even gonna... It was like John asking me to come out today, you know? I mean, you know, you want me to go to a college? I didn't even go to school. What's the relevance, you know? And so, you know, and then that's one of the ironies that I want to speak about at the end of this is just, like, how people... You know, because I was so young or because I was so inexperienced, how people saw a much broader picture than I did at the time. So I remember them saying, you know, would you like to paint murals for the company? Well, I was 18. I hadn't done much painting. And my drawings were on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. I hadn't really done large-scale stuff. So I immediately agreed because I just would do anything to get off the line. And also it was like... Is this my chance? Because I had kind of given up on any hopes of being an artist, you know, because the few great drawers of the school went on to CCS, and they already had their plans for doing this, and they're doing that, and, you know, they're going to get into an ad agency or whatever, and I was just clueless. So I had given up on all those ideas about, oh, one day I'll be an artist kind of thing, or, you know, this talent can carry me through to something that I love to do. And so when they asked me to do that, I thought, this is a glimmer of hope. Could this work? And so I immediately agreed to take the job. And, you know, I remember going home that day and telling my dad about it. And I was like, so excited and obviously so, like, terrified, because the first wall they wanted me to do was, like, 10 foot tall. And it was the painting of Muhammad Ali and Joe Louis, you know. So I really didn't know how I was even going to go about that, what materials to use. I hadn't gone to school. I wasn't familiar with, you know, materials and their application and, you know, all this other stuff. So, which is another way, and I'll get to it later, which is another way that I, you know, again, how this culture shaped me as an artist, you know what I mean, with the materials that I use today and then the non-traditional means, if you will. I remember going home and saying, Dad, you know, they asked me to do this thing. And he was so excited, and I was just terrified. And I was like, but Dad, I don't draw anything bigger than this, you know? Like, it's a 10-foot wall, and, like, what am I going to use? And that sort of thing. And he's like, it'll come to you. Don't worry about it. And he's celebrating, and I'm terrified. And so he pulled me off the line. And I remember I was so excited to get the hell out of there that I started, like, following them, and they're like, do you want to grab your jacket and your lunch and your things, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I guess that was my, that's the backstory that I wanted to fill you in on, just, you know, my upbringing with the insulated, you know, upbringing and not even speaking English until kindergarten. And you know, what it was like for, you know, I mean, kids speaking about green eggs and ham and Yes I Am and Peter Pan, and like, we didn't get read those stories, so I always felt in the dark. And then so I was just breaking out of that where, you know, I didn't smell like funky European food at school, and, you know, I was, you know, figured out like how to wear stuff that was relevant and that kind of stuff. And then immediately into Ford Motor Company, where I was an alien again, you know, and I was like, okay, you know, come up to speed again here. But I want to say that, like, and I'm totally digressing from my notes, and maybe that's just as well, but Brooklyn, please orient me if you will. I just want to say that, like, what was interesting, because I was referring to the culture and the white ties and the, you know, afros and pics and that sort of thing, and how segregated everything was, because I didn't feel that I would ever identify with anybody. Like, there wasn't a group in there that was me. You know, there wasn't these, like, counterculture artists or anything like that. So I just felt all alone. But what I learned was, as I started painting, that these ideas that they had about boosting company morale and bringing people together and bringing down boundaries was what was exactly happening before my eyes. You know, I remember as I was painting that Muhammad Ali, I remember thinking people were going to be pissed because everything was based on seniority. And if you didn't have seniority, you had the worst job in that kind of thing. So the fact that I was off the line, and I, you know, because being chained to the line, and I'm, again, we're from the Motor City, so you guys have heard these stories, but it's just really, like, I used to call it the grand illusion, because everybody would look like they were moving so slow, but then when they put me on the job, it was panic and I couldn't keep up. And so I was like, I don't get it. You know, this is like the worst job in the world. But before I got on it, I thought I had arrived, you know. And so before I knew it, I was painting murals, and I noticed that, like, people that I would never identify with in a million years started beginning to take their breaks and eat their sandwiches and watch me paint. And I'm painting Muhammad Ali knocking out Sonny Liston, and they remember the fight, and they talk about, they remember when he was Cassius Clay. And next thing I know, it's opened up all this dialogue, and it's an event, and people are coming to watch me, and they're coming to watch and see what my progress is. And every day they're checking on me, and they're talking about it, and they know about me. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Like, this is really working. Which, not only did I not think it would work, I didn't care. I was just like, off the line, you know what I mean? I'll do it. But it was just a great experience to see that really happen, and to realize that they saw something that I didn't, and that art was bigger than I had imagined, and was, you know, such a great disarming and politically correct theme to that would transcend, you know. I talk about a lot in these notes, which I totally lost my place, but about how I feel in many ways I was one of the only people at Ford Motor Company that could cross these political boundaries and not face repercussions, because in, or at least my experience in the automotive industry was, if you're union, you don't hang around with salary guys. And if you do, you're a suck ass, and we ditch you, and everyone talks about you, and, like, you know, you don't go to Mahogany Row. And even if you're with this union, I mean, even if you're with this union guy, you might not necessarily want to affiliate yourself with this guy, because they have this history from the 60s when they ran against each other. And, you know, so you're walking into all that, you're walking into this web of sensitivity. And I really think that the only umbrella I could have came in under and been accepted and not, like, had my head chopped off was with art. Because when they saw me talk to the plant manager, and they wanted to, like, there was like, is that, and they're like, oh, you know, it's about the mural. And then I would come in and talk to the plant chairman, and, like, during stressful times too, during elections, you know, I mean, that's usually, normally a time when you just sit quietly and don't bother anybody and that sort of thing. And being able to come in under such an intense time where people's careers are on the line and talk about art, I remember not even wanting to, they'd say, oh, go check with Bill Johnson and see where he wants that, or do we want to put a, you know, a union logo in that, or is that just, you know, and then I would think, I don't want to go up to Bill Johnson's office right now, there's an election going on, he'll kill me, you know, he's pounding his fist on the desk, I can hear him from outside the door, you know, and I just remember those early meetings with these guys, like knocking on the door thinking, how can I go in right now and talk about something so irrelevant as art? You know, I mean, there's an election going on and I'm going to talk to him about a mural, you know, like, and what I learned was it was beautiful because it was a break from all that, you know, and when they would see me, they would say, you know, who the fuck is it? And then they're like, oh, Tony, come on in. Come on in. Yeah, go shut the door. Get everybody out. You know what I mean? And it was just like, it was really cool because I could come in under this like, I don't even know how to explain it, but it was just this beautiful theme that I could walk into anybody's room in, and it was, they could have a break from their daily grind and talk about art. And just how great of an experience that was for me and how much I learned from that too. Moving on, you know, into galleries and museums and doing corporate commissions, you know, because so much of it is applicable. You know, I know that working for Coca-Cola, you know, they kind of want to give you the lowdown on all the things you can't paint. Well, the buzzwords that they need to hear that disarm them and make them feel comfortable and with the fact that you've done these sorts of things before and that you're not just some radical artist that might throw Lenin in a mural or something like that. Which I did, by the way. Anyways, it was just really great experience for me because I use those skills every day, you know, and I think that it's helped me so much with my confidence and just, you know, having faith in the fact that art will transcend those boundaries and bring down those walls and open up communication. And it got to a point, and you guys are probably going to think, man, that is crazy, but this is my belief, and I truly believe this, that I became a liaison amongst all, or, you know, between all the dissension, you know. I know that, like, when I would be in the plant manager's office, you know, and he would be so pissed at the chairman because the chairman stopped production for this safety thing, and, you know, there was times where they just, like, hated each other. And then I could come in and, like, plug the chairman and say, oh, you know, like, he'd say, oh, Bill, you know, shuts down the line. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, he really knows your heart is in the right spot. And, like, I could, like, say these things that would kind of, like, did he really say that about me? Yeah, he's not a bad guy, you know what I mean? I know he's got to do what he's got to do. And, like, before I knew it, I was, like, building these bridges between people that just didn't like each other and because of what they stood for, you know, and not necessarily for personal reasons, you know, like, your company, your agenda is this. I'm union, my agenda is this. Therefore, you are an asshole, and everything I do is in spite of you, you know. And I was able to come in and really build bridges, like, as I would go from facility to facility. You know, I would find that a lot of times, the UAW chairman at this facility and the UAW chairman at this facility particularly didn't like each other because they were at some convention. Yes.
I'm sorry to leave early today, but I'm really glad I came because I worked when I was a college student and I worked several years in the end.
That's thanks. Well, I'm glad you agree because it started at Wayne Assembly, yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear that because, again, this is my perspective and this is how I took it in. And so, you know, it's open for interpretation. Thanks. Thanks so much for coming. So, again, you know, and feel free to ask any questions because I'm all over the place anyways. I mean, I'm sure that I'll be getting to something relevant here shortly, but just bear with me. But again, art was always like the breath of fresh air. I noticed. And that gave me the confidence to move forward with my art career and understand that, like, these, you know, these sensitivities and these fine lines are relevant everywhere, but with the blanket of art, you know, you can really go in and just kind of disarm people. And so let me see if there's anything here that I So again, you know, it was just a shocker to me to see. I think one of the other really surprising things that I had never experienced going into the auto facilities was egos. You know, because a plant manager, for example, or a union chairman who might, I've never witnessed this, but put his pants on the same way we do, gets treated very, very differently than the average person. And you watch people sort of panic and act outside their own character anytime there's a higher up around. And like, if the plant manager is coming down to the floor, everyone's frazzled, everyone's scared, everyone's running, everybody's like, he's coming, pick everything. And it was just so great that, like, because that was my initial reaction when they would say, go see, you know, Ferrelli over here and talk to, and I'm like, I'm going to walk up to the plant manager's office right now. Are you crazy? You know what I mean? The managers won't even do that, you know? So it was just really cool that, like, there were these crazy egos and these guys carried these big sticks and they were mean. I mean, they're just straight up mean. It was, I imagine it was a lot like the military, you know, and their particular pecking order. But and also you would witness these guys talk to the person below them. I mean, every name in the book, you know, at that particular time. It's chilled out quite a bit because we have zero tolerance today. But, you know, I mean, the language that they use and the manner that they treated each other was shocking, you know. And so for me to be able to go in with art and them begin to talk about, you know, flowers and their family at home was just, you know, it let me know early on that I really had something special that could go in and be politically correct no matter what group. And, you know, again, without repercussions, you know, I didn't get punished for my affiliations with other people. And again, you know, those blacks with the afros were watching me paint those boxers. I mean, they were like, I mean, I was like the jerk, you know what I mean? I was like Steve Martin amongst all these. And it was just amazing, which again, and we talk about the effects that the workplace environment has. I didn't have a lot of experience with African Americans when I hired into Ford. Today, you know, African Americans are, you know, my predominant collectors are African Americans, you know. Hispanics and that sort of thing, and it's beginning to come out in my work. You know, I, in my mind, Pedro is a little, you know, Mexican boy on the streets of Mexico, and this is his little, like, this is his little safe haven place where he's been coming since he was a kid. You know, and he's and he has you know, since he was younger, and tic tac toe and mama, and when he learned to write his name. And you know, so this was painted for the Charles H. Wright Museum, and the title is Still We Rise, because it's part of an exhibit there, you know what I mean? This piece in particular, and also, not only has it shaped, like, the subjects that go into my art today, the materials, you know. So 18 years old, you sort of walk into this concrete jungle, you know, and everything's gray and there's steel everywhere and concrete, and, you know, it's not like your living room, let's just say. And when they first asked me to come on and paint, one of the first things they said was, so what do you need to do? Do you need to go to an art store? Do you need to buy materials? Well, I'm looking at, one of the first jobs was on a stamping press, you know, and it was greasy and grimy, and, you know, and I was like, although I didn't go to art college, I'm pretty certain that there's no paint in a tube that's going to work for this. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are power washing with chemicals, you know, walls, and what am I going to use, you know? So them assuming that I was the expert because they assumed that I could paint these 10-foot tall murals, you know, because I was sketching. And again, you know, they in some way knew that I could do it. You know, it was me that never knew that all these things would unfold the way that they did. But so they asked me, you know, well, what do you need? Do you need brushes? Do you need to go to an art store? And I kind of ruled an art store out immediately. And so I started noticing this shiny paint on everything, you know, this like bulletproof industrial enamel paint that they were painting machines with and floors with and walls with and columns and steel. And so I knew that that would hold up because it had been proven. So I said, well, where is this paint that you're using? And they were like, kid, you want to go to an art store, don't you? You know what I mean? And I was like, no, like, seriously, show me where the paints that you use, that you're normally using on the walls, because obviously that's not going to peel or you know, counteract to grease and stuff like that. So I remember they took me to this painter crib, and everything was in metal cans, you know, and it was this bright, brilliant, shiny paint. And I thought, this shit is great, you know? And so I kind of dipped into a few colors and mixed, and I was like, this is the stuff, this will work. And they're like, are you sure? This is what you want to use? And again, that was my environment, you know? Had I gone to college, and nothing against college, I wish I would have gone to college. Let me make that clear from the start. I wish I would have gone, really. But, I mean, had I gone to college, maybe I wouldn't even considered using these enamels and paints that were exclusive to the body of a car at one time. I mean, you know, the enamels that I was using, they used to use to paint vehicles with. Today, it's a much more sophisticated process. They bake, you know, paints on and stuff like that. So they don't chemically dry naturally. They need to be baked on. But these materials that I use today are, you know, all automotive materials. Like this here is a hood of a car. And, you know, I took a plasma cutter from a welder in the plant and plasma cut this out. These pallets were engine pallets from 1970 when they used to put engines on wood pallets. You know, they're all hardwood oak pallets. The nails I just sheared off. All the paint that was used on this was salvaged materials that they were discarding, that, you know, materials that they used to paint stop signs on the floor with, that sort of thing, you know, walls. So again, I think it really just echoes how much workplace environment shapes us, you know, because I got curious after a while and I started looking up, you know, artists using these materials, and they don't, you know what I mean? Because I just think they're two different worlds, and because those two worlds collided for me, you know, kind of sort of gave birth to this new genre, I guess. Well, I recently was signed in July, and so I no longer can determine where I show and stuff like that. So little by little, I've been collecting all my stuff back from various exhibits in Detroit, one piece at a time, and I'm warehousing them. I have a solo show at one of the most famous galleries in the United States, if not one of the most famous galleries in the world. It's in Colorado, and it's called Walnut Street, and they feature, you know, the most famous living and dead artists, you know. It was just such a huge honor for me. I just got that news, maybe, thanks, about a week ago. So I've been collecting all my stuff and preparing for that show. They have Dr. Seuss's complete collection. You know, the guy that created the Saturday morning cartoon for the Beatles shows there. Peter Max, who did Beatles shows there. Todd White, who's the most successful living artist of our time, shows there. Justin Bua, who's another just... And it's crazy because these were artists that I, like, admired and followed and stalked for 10 years. You know what I mean? Just like, where do they show? Why'd they get this commission? You know? And now I'm showing alongside of them. They're flying me down to Colorado. They're paying for my room and board. They're buying 3 originals, and it's all in the contract. So it's a little, it's a little shocking to me to see that really I've bullshitted my way this far. You know what I mean? Like, but so to answer your question, I'm just collecting it now and preparing for a show in mid-November. So again, are there any questions? I mean, I can. Right, I still am currently a UAW employee on a leave of absence. Luckily, there's, you know, this leave of absence thing that hasn't dried up yet, because everything at Ford is dried up, by the way. You know, but it's a great program for people like me that are possibly transitioning into another field. So I'm just glad that program's in place, because it allows me to take a few months or a year here or a year there, and you know, if I fall flat on my face, then I can go back, sort of thing, you know, and have that. I hope not. I'm thankful for the experience, and really even the people have become so dear to me, but I really feel like, you know, I need to keep moving on with the art, and I think I've maxed out there. I know that, I'm sorry, somebody else had a question. Did that answer your question, sweetie? Okay.
Yeah, Sharon had a question. I'll follow Sharon.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about how your art developed.
Very, very good point. When I first started painting for Ford Motor Company, obviously, I would have never tried to, you know, let me start here. As a kid, did anybody watch Good Times? Remember Good Times? And they had, JJ was a painter, and so I was really influenced by that. And not having a lot of exposure to museums and that sort of thing, TV was sort of my window into, you know, art. So again, Saturday morning cartoons, that kind of thing was the stuff that really got my attention and inspired me. When they asked me to paint for Ford Motor Company, I knew Bugs Bunny wasn't going to cut it. You know what I mean? So, but I had some experience in realism too, and I noticed that early on, the adults in my life, it seemed, were only impressed if you could paint like a photo. And although it wasn't really what I was interested in doing, I noticed that, like, everybody, you know, the comments that would come out of people's mouths and stuff, that everybody kind of was just far more impressed if you could make something look like an actual photograph. So when I started to move toward that, which became a lot more technical, you know, sort of, I don't want to say copying, but, you know, this line is here, and then I'll move it over here, so I started, you know, when I started painting for Ford, I knew that I would have to paint realism, that they weren't going to, you know, real fond of mannerisms and exaggerations and that sort of thing. And I got pretty good at it. Unfortunately, I don't have any pieces here because they're huge. I did manage to salvage some pieces that were in facilities that had been torn down and stuff like that. And they're like in my garage and warehouses. They're 10 feet tall and stuff like that. But it was all realism, really just hyper real, you know, seeing every crow's foot and pores in people's faces and stuff like that. And I sort of think, you know, it became, after 19 years of it, you know, 20 years of it, it became kind of unfulfilling for me, because I really found that I couldn't express myself like I wanted to, and I couldn't, like, pull ideas out of the sky and just out of my imagination and make them work for Ford Motor Company, because there were, you know, again, there were those, you know, boundaries. So I began feeling unfulfilled about it and thinking, you know, I'm really never going to be able to make a name for myself painting photographs, you know, and duplicating photographs and that sort of thing, or painting, you know, a series of cars, because a lot of the projects would be, hey, can you paint every car we've ever built at this facility? Which is great, but it really wasn't me, you know? So I struggled with that a lot, like, you know, that kind of thing where you wonder, wait a minute, why did I get into this to begin with? You know, is this, you know, early on I was inspired by cartoons and JJ from Good Times, and next thing I knew, I was painting Henry Ford like over and over and over again, you know, so it kind of became redundant, and it really, really, really wasn't that fulfilling. So I sort of think that this stuff is a rebellion almost in retrospect to that, those limitations and boundaries. John, you had a question?
Well, can you tell us a little more about, I mean, in the murals that you were doing in the plant, how much control do you have about the kinds of images that you use? And, I mean, I know that some of them were aimed at safety and beautification.
Mm-hmm.
What's the kind of range of the kinds of things that you were painting on the wall?
Mm-hmm. I remember any time it had to do specifically with Henry Ford or Walter Reuther or things like that, they would let me go with it. It's shocking to me to see that they let me paint Henry Ford knocking out Sonny Liston, and that was like promoted, because today they would never let me do that because that would promote violence and workplace violence and zero tolerance, and it goes against everything that is kind of evolved due to conditions. And so, you know, it actually went the opposite way, and it became more and more restricted and governed. I remember when, to me, I was always fascinated by the Battle of the Overpass. I know John's familiar with that, yeah. And there was this great scene in there, you know, where they had the goons had their sticks out, and it was a violent scene, and we had this perfect wall for it. And I remember how how discouraged I was when they shot me down on that, you know, because they said that, and I thought, well, this is history, you know what I mean? This is such a integral part of like why we are where we are and that sort of thing. And when they shot me down on that, you know, I was so inspired by it that I sort of lost something that day, I think. And since then, it's gotten more and more. I was really pleased recently when they asked me to do the piece for their grand opening. And that was obviously in my, you know, newer, latest, more recent style. You know, it wasn't photoreal, and it wasn't from a direct duplicate of an image, just larger. And, you know, when I pitched the idea, because we were demolishing the Michigan truck plant at the time, and I said, let me go in there and get these materials and let them survive and let them be art in a new facility. And it's a great idea. And they were really concerned. And also, like, I noticed a lot of, like, awkward silence even. And this is, you know, I didn't plan on talking about this, but since you mentioned it, I remember when the fact that Lily was black, you know, believe it or not, I felt like that was kind of becoming a hard sell for me for some reason. They ended up letting me do it, so I really don't know if that was, you know, part of their reservation or not. But to me, it was important because as I was designing that particular piece, I went back into, you know, I was looking for African-American labor heroes, because we had Rosie the Riveter and we had, you know, Diego and his scene, African Americans really weren't represented in any labor movement very much. So it was really important to me, to being that Ford Motor Company's workforce is 50%, you know, African American, that it was really important for me to, you know, have a labor hero that was not only African American but a double minority, because she was a woman. So, you know, again, that was a little bit too much information, but.
Sure.
Could you speak a little bit about other than you talk about your expertise, people kind of watch you, but over the years you've been doing this, what are the relationships that you've had in your art with the workers in the plant, and all the people,
you know, again, art has been this like phenomenon for me that has brought me that has become so relevant, you know, that I've become relevant and people have become relevant to me that otherwise I don't believe would have ever been. I know that when I have shows, I get a ton of support from the plant people that I've met that have watched me evolve through the years and watched my art evolve. I have one of my collectors that owns four pieces actually works at the facility, and he's in skilled trades, and he's just this real savvy art guy with this unbelievable art collection. You would never know it, you know, and which is kind of rare for that environment. I mean, I hope I'm not generalizing too much, but it's not really an art crowd, you know. It's not really like, you know, they don't talk about the museums they went to over the weekend and things like that, you know, or how they went to the opera. But to answer your question, you know, a lot of real sincere relationships were formed just by painting something and you know, it evoking thought and conversation until there was a relevant and common ground for us. Until the next thing I know, I'm over this guy's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and I don't even know how I ever had anything in common with him to begin with, you know. So, you know, that's something, I don't know if I answered your question, and I apologize if I haven't, but I think that's something that, you know, I would like to echo today about, you know, my experience and just how the most unlikely people have come into my life. And I've gone to the most unlikely places creating art. I have the formula. Oh my gosh. I loved it when, like, I just remember this project in school where we scaled the drawing and we just did this little grid process, you know, and that's how I scaled the first piece, and I told you how I stumbled across the materials. Art projects in schools, I'm so active. I go to schools probably 15 or 20 times a year, and I introduce the kids to, I bring in recycled acrylic latex paint because I don't want to, you know, lead poisoning for the little guys, but and I bring in cardboard that they're just discarding in the plant. You know, there's this 8x10 sheets of, or 4x10 sheets of cardboard, and I'll just crop them all down. I coat them with the industrial material first, and it fossilizes these cardboard. I mean, like, you could kill somebody with one. I mean, they're like, and then we paint on those, and I, you know, discuss with them, or I share with them how important it is to me to recycle, and what the bigger picture is, and how, you know, one minute this was garbage and today it's art, and you're going to paint this and it's going to be an heirloom in your family as opposed to on a waste, you know, in a landfill somewhere. So I work with my kids all the time. I love it. As a matter of fact, if I can just hit with all this, I'm hanging out with kids, man. They're the greatest. I mean, I cop so many licks from those little guys too, man. Like, I mean, I see them paint, I'm just like, how did you do that? Like, what colors did you mix to get that? You know, I mean, they're fascinating, and I just love it so much. Yes.
I'm wondering if you have the opportunity to meet any other artists that worked in other times. Years ago, I also someone told me about some paintings that were being done in some of the Chrysler plants, and at the Mound Road Truck Plant, I think it was Chrysler.
Oh.
And they, Chrysler, had an initiative of allowing workers to paint. They weren't doing anything but kind of work here today. They were doing these murals that were mostly kind of in the category of John's kind of beautification kind of murals. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because I was interviewing them and talking to them about what they were doing, but what they were doing mostly were, first they were painting murals of the cars that were made.
Right, right.
So the cars and then the Mount Rose plant as trucks. And then they went ahead and they allowed the workers to, they negotiated to do something else, and what they were able to negotiate was they Northern Michigan team.
Mm-hmm.
Cottage cottages, you know, lakes where they, and people said, you know, they worked all week just to get in the car to go north. So a lot of guys said it's the best thing. And workers that really like having these outdoor kind of scenes of northern Michigan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, I've read, because obviously I get Ford World that comes to my house, so I've read that there was an artist in Dearborn that for a short time did some plant beautification, and I have read that other automotive plants do similar things, and it's part of this employee involvement where, you know, not only are you... you know, beautifying the plant to boost morale, but you're bringing somebody from within the shop, you know what I mean, to do it. And also, we would get input from, we had a suggestion box. That's how we came across Muhammad Ali and then Joe Lewis, and then we did, again, you want to talk about workplace violence and subject matter. I mean, I was doing Clint Eastwood and John Wayne with guns, you know. So, never happened today, and I'm surprised they didn't paint over them, but... you know, I haven't met a lot of those people, but I know that it takes place, and I believe that it's due to the effects that that employee involvement has amongst workplace environments, you know, to see that, you know, Ford Motor Company obviously had the money to hire Norman Rockwell at one time for their 50th anniversary. He did a series of paintings, Diego Rivera in the 30s, you know what I mean? Albert Kahn, in his own right, was, you know, an artist, and he was designing the factories for Ford Motor Company. So they obviously had the means to bring whoever they wanted on. It was specifically designed so that, you know, it was within. And although I haven't met a lot of those artists, I know that they do it at facilities. And even small shops a lot of times will take somebody off to do a mural. And we did some landscapes of northern Michigan, too, because... that was their vacation spot, and that was it took them away from what they were about to go do, and it really worked. That's the only thing that I can, the hugest irony was watching it unfold and watching everything that they said would happen. I mean, there was people that were like, why would you paint a factory? That's stupid. This is a factory. I mean, you had those people, you know, but they were so few and far between. Everybody pretty much had a positive attitude about it, so.
Let me just say parenthetically that Chrysler actually did a national Chrysler worker, including management, art exhibit and art contest.
Yeah. Now I did hear about that.
We printed catalogs of those women, and so it was really quite something. UAW would often cover it, saw their name, and just since Tony doesn't know this, I'll mention, and certain others know that we actually had two art exhibits here in town in the Creole Gallery. One that was only a local fixo, two of the UAW artists, but then we did another one that was Region 1C. So we had artists from Adrian, from Flint, and from Lansing, who exhibited at Creole Gallery. So I think that there are a number of examples of worker artists that are people who go home and don't even get to do it on the walls.
Yeah, afterward.
Turn around and do it at home. But I think that the interesting thing, Tony, I'm sure other people are interested too, the fact that you decided that is part of a foot, that, you know, that you're using the actual palettes. I mean, in effect, you didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You could have simply said, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to do the regular
palette. Yeah.
Or I'm going to do, but you decided to root your artistic expression outside of work.
Yeah, because it just was so relevant. And I actually became prolific at using those materials, too. Like, for me to paint on so many cinder block walls and so many, you know, gritty environments and metal and, you know, that sort of thing, and use those enamels, which are really have their, you know, they're different than any other painting material, or, you know, than any other paint. They respond differently. They're applied differently. And I know that when I was having a conversation with my wife at the time, and I remember just saying, I feel so unfulfilled. You know, one of the last projects that they asked me to do at Ford Motor Company that I declined, which caused a little dissension in itself, and I didn't, they didn't ask me to do anything for like 2.5 years after that. But it was during 9/11, and the towers had went down, and we had a particular plant manager that was really rigid with his ideas, and so he came in and he saw the paintings and he said, you know, who's the resident artist? Is this? So I went up and had a meeting with him, and he wanted me to paint a bald eagle with tears and an American flag in the background, you know. And it reminded me of something you might see, like, on a tattoo down south or something, you know what I mean? And I was just like, I can't, you know, I can't do it, you know? I mean, eagles don't cry, and what, like, I mean, I'm a patriot, you know, but this is just, this is crossing the line. And also, I thought, why don't you just get a bumper sticker, and you, because I know there's one out there like that, isn't there? I mean, so I remember that, you know, he was so upset that, like, I didn't view that as another great opportunity to do another painting, and I declined, and he was pissed at me and offended, and I just wasn't going to do it, you know. And I said, I said, can I submit some of my ideas? And he said, no. So I said, all right, well, you know, good luck with your ego. But, yeah, absolutely. You know, I have a piece in World Headquarters. I painted a piece for the grand opening of the Dino Lab in Dearborn in 1996. I think that, like, if you were to tour our facility, you know, the facility that I'm currently at, you would see a lot of my paintings. But a lot of those plants have been demoed and repurposed, sold off to parts suppliers. You know, a lot of times they've called me and said, hey, Tone, they're looting the place, man, and one of your paintings, just come retrieve them or do something, you know, so I'll come and get a painting off the wall that had been there for 15 years, you know. You asked another question as well.
Do you see it in your work on the tours there?
Yeah, so I think that you would, depending on where you went, but the last painting I did was... in our new facility, we built a prayer room. So, again, you know, it's so hard to joust with what their ideas are and what my ideas are after 20 years of doing this and going to galleries. So the last piece I did, they wanted me to do praying hands for the prayer room, a big, you know, actually it was three murals on three sides of the building. No, we had one. but even then, you know, they had brought me this picture, and it was these praying hands, and there was like the robe, and you know, and I said to the guy that was in charge of this particular prayer room that had built it and stuff, I said, well, these are, you know, the prayer room is supposed to be non-denominational, you know, I mean, it should be like anybody, and these praying hands with robes are clearly like some Catholic iconic kind of thing. And he said, well, we want the praying hands. And I said, well, you're leaning to... I said, what about a Muslim doesn't pray like that? You know, so I went ahead and just painted my own idea anyways. And I wish I had a photo of it, but it was great. It's this guy, and he's kneeling on the ground, and his head's down, and he's praying like this. And behind him is a factory scene with a sunset, you know. So... but he had a shaved head. So, like, he could have, you know, you didn't know if this was some Muslim guy, you didn't know if it was a cat, you know, it really was ambiguous. And although he hated the idea when I told him, when I called him out on, well, this is Catholicism, you know, I grew up Catholic, I know that, you know what I mean? And he didn't want to hear that, but when I did the sketch and did a quick loose gesture of it. He loved it, and we in fact went with that. That was the last piece that I did, I think, a month and a half ago or something.
Well, Bill gets the last question, and then a couple of quick announcements. Okay. I'm curious about something. Earlier thought, gaining time.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I just need to, like, sit on an idea forever, and then, you know, just as I, in the 11th hour, when I think I'm going in this direction, I think of the one thing that puts it all together. So, it's a pretty tough question, and I appreciate you asking it. I'm not sure how I would go about it, but I would try, in a mural like that, to show, again, a commonality, you know, or some, you know, between everybody and that sort of thing. How I would go about it, I don't know, but that's a great question.
Okay, now I hate to have to cut it off, but let me just, first of all, I forgot to say that the Lansing Motor City's Office in the Motor National Heritage Area was one of the co-sponsors today. Do come to all this stuff. If you haven't signed in, sign in. Now I'm saying that Donna begged me that she got a piece of time in her question for
you. You said you wanted to do the battle of the overpass. When did you get to do it? And if not, how would you do that today?
I never got to do it. And when I wanted to do it, believe it or not, it would have been another, I had an idea to copy another photo larger. But today it would be so different. You know, there's gosh, you guys are going to probably know. What's the famous Picasso painting where they got the nightsticks and the police are...
Yeah.
So, I mean, I picture it being more raw in its expression and to sort of, you know, probably even like... I mean, those pictures were pretty bloody anyways. I don't know if you remember, you know, Walter Reuther and, you know, but I would probably, you know, tend to be graphic, but again, expressive in mannerisms and stuff like that. No stiff people, no, you know, I would want like every movement to look like it was, you know, follow through and that kind of stuff, because that's really what I'm into today is that mannerism and the people's body language and expression. So I would want to capitalize on that. I will do it. I will do it because it's a part of my history.
Well, thank you.